Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game on this Wednesday. We talk about how the NFC South tends to be up for grabs. The AFC South may be up for grabs as well. The changes that have happened in that division, and now we just talked about what's going on in Jacksonville with the Jacksonville Jaguars off to an 0-2 start. They're the Indianapolis Colts, like the Falcons, 1-1 and tied for first place in the division. Of course, the difference is that Indianapolis hadn't had a chance to get a home game yet, and they've got a bit of a change of quarterback. Let's get the inside skinny now on what we can expect on Sunday in Indiana. We're joined by Stephen Holder, who covers the Indianapolis Colts, is one of their beat writers, and joining us this morning on the WadeFord.com hotline. Morning to you, Stephen.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Stephen, let's just talk about this team. Go back to when the moment, the Andrew Luck moment, and walk us through, what all of the kind of like angst around the team. Was it as difficult as it seemed for the other guys to kind of wrap their brains around, or were they able to move on relatively quickly?
Oh, they were as shocked as you were, as any of us were. There's no question about that. I think I would say less than a week before the announcement, I had written a story in which I talked to other guys in the locker room about what Andrew Luck had been doing while he was hurt. And every response I got was basically them telling me about how hard he was working to get back. And he was taking reps in the walkthroughs and the constant rehab and in every meeting. And so when the announcement came down, it was stunning because just about none of them, except the very small handful that he told ahead of time, had any inkling that this was coming. So, yeah, they were shocked. It was, but to their credit, I will say they did sort of resolve to move on pretty quickly. And I think that Saturday night it happened, and then by evening, and they were ready to go out and practice, and they were moving on. And they honestly did. It wasn't just talk. They really did show that in their actions.
We're talking to Stephen Holder, Indianapolis Colts beat writer on 92.9 The Game. So, Stephen, they move on to Jacoby Brissett. How did the team embrace him once they figured out all this was going on with Andrew Luck?
Well, the nice thing about Jacoby Brissett is that he is, I think, one of the absolute most respected players on the roster. I mean, and not just respected, but they truly like the guy. They love the guy, really. I mean, he is a guy who, and as you know from playing, there are definitely two sides to a team. There's offense and defense. And a lot of times it's very segregated and, guys kind of don't interact as much. That is not the case with Jacoby Brissett. His best friend is a linebacker, Anthony Walker. I mean, and I think you see him over there with the defensive guys oftentimes, joking around, playing around. And I know that doesn't necessarily say a lot, maybe, but I think it's a really worthwhile observation because it's not necessarily that common. But it shows, I think, it speaks to how much this team has embraced Jacoby Brissett just because he's just a guy that everybody likes. And so that helps him, first of all. And then the other thing that has really worked in Jacoby Brissett's favor is the fact that he has, for the last two off seasons, he has been the only quarterback with the starting unit. Andrew Luck in 2018 did not practice throughout OTAs, didn't make it back until training camp, came back and had a great season, as you know. But throughout that offseason, Jacoby Brissett took all the first-team reps with Frank Reich while they were installing the offense. It was all Jacoby Brissett. So then, come this offseason, same thing. Andrew Luck isn't 100%. They keep him out. And Jacoby Brissett takes all the snaps through OTAs. Andrew Luck starts training camp, but he's a little bit gimpy. A few days later, they hold him out, and Jacoby Brissett finishes training camp and the preseason. So he took all the reps, and he's been basically the guy, at least as it relates to practice, for the past 2 years. And so that has really, I think, gone a long way toward building trust between Jacoby Brissett and his teammates. And there really wasn't much that had to be said or done when he took over. It's just that, you know what, now it's for real, and now it's not just practice.
Yeah, the Indianapolis Colts started off 1-1. They lost to the L.A. Chargers in the opener. Tough game, tough loss, and then went to Nashville and dodged that fire, that pregame fireworks thing that went off.
Yeah.
That had to be pretty bizarre. I mean, that fireworks thing lighting up the field. And managed to beat the Tennessee Titans 19-17 last week. So they're 1-1, and they get a big win in the division, too, on the road, which is a score for you guys to start the season here. Stephen Holder is covering the team. Stephen, you look at the club now, and they kind of try and reimagine themselves as the second-best rushing team in the NFL. They're going to lean on Marlon Mack, and that's how Frank Reich has got to play this. At least early, has got to be run first, correct?
I think they're taking what the defense is giving them to some extent, but they do want to emphasize the run. Frank Reich said, early in the offseason, I remember him saying, he said, look, we want to be a top five rushing attack this season. And we all kind of looked at him like, yeah, I don't know about that. And to his credit, so far, they are walking the walk. But at the same time, they are going to have to throw the football. And I think the numbers aren't big right now. Look, they're one of the, in terms of passing yards, you know, they're near the bottom of the league right now. However, I think what I've seen so far is when they've had to throw it and when the situation has called for it, Jacoby Brissett has made the throws. And I think that's all that really can be judged. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're throwing it for 300 yards a game. What does matter is when you need a first down, when you have a situation where you have to throw it, can you make the plays? And frankly, they've been able to do that. I mean, Jacoby Brissett was 3-for-3 in the red zone for touchdowns on Sunday against Tennessee. And, I mean, a couple of those throws were really difficult throws, or not necessarily difficult, but just really timely and accurate throws. And, as you know, down the red zone, things get tight and it gets hard, but he's been able to make difficult throws when called upon, and I think that's what it boils down to. Look, they're one of the top teams in third down conversions right now. So they're making critical plays when they need to. I think they're number 7 or 8 in the league in third down conversions. So, you know, they're getting it done. And I also think that I saw this last year with the Colts. Their offensive approach evolved over the course of the season. They certainly threw the ball a lot to start last season, but they were much shorter throws, very, very short on the air yards to start the season. And as the season progressed, they got more and more aggressive with their deeper throws. So we'll see how this season progresses. I don't think we've seen what we're going to see. I think we will see more as the season unfolds.
We're talking to Stephen Holder, Indianapolis Colts beat reporter on 92.9 The Game. So, Stephen, how do you think that the Indianapolis Colts offense is going to handle a guy like Grady Jarrett?
Yeah, I mean, look, they're going to have to be really physical at the point of attack. And they're coming off a game against, I think, an underrated Tennessee defense. That was a dogfight up front, I'm telling you now. I mean, they've got a really, really physical front. Mike Vrabel is a really good defensive coach. So the Colts got a huge test, I think, up front on Sunday in Tennessee. Now, look, they ran for over 200 yards against the Chargers, and that was not going to be repeated against Tennessee. But what we did see was they stuck with the run, and they took what they got. Will they double him? They may have to do that at times. You're going to see a lot of two tight end sets with the Colts. Yeah, Frank Reich loves tight ends. He's got some lineups where they even use three tight ends. They did that a couple of times on Sunday. So lots of tight ends. That gives you the opportunity, if you so choose, to double a guy like Grady Jarrett. I think that opportunity will be there for them. But the Colts are pretty good up front. So, I mean, they'll be ready for this. They'll be equipped to handle it. And I'm all ready to see some Quentin Nelson and Grady Jarrett action. I think that might be a treat for us. But I think it's going to be much of what we saw last Sunday against Tennessee. Just a really physical front, and it's going to be, you know, man against man, and somebody's going to win. But I think they'll both win their share. The Colts will win theirs, and Grady will win some of his.
Talking about the Colts and getting the inside from Indianapolis with Stephen Holder. Stephen, Adam Vinatieri is like 74 years old, and he's still kicking, but he's not doing – he ain't doing too well right now. I know that they're going to let him – what is he, 1-for-5 on PATs? They're going to let him kick. This is a guy who's going to the Hall of Fame, and it's kind of sad in a way to see that he's struggling this way. How long a leash does he have?
Yeah, I got to think that leash is pretty short at this point. I mean, look, he left 7 points on the field in the season opener. Seven. I mean, that's just...
You win the game if he doesn't do that.
Yeah, they win the game. There's no question they win the game. And to be completely honest, his misses could have cost them this past Sunday because Tennessee missed a makeable field goal in the fourth quarter. If they make it, the Colts lose that game. So, you know, they got out of there with a 2-point win. And Vinatieri missed 2 extra points in that game. So I think at this point it's costing you games, or at least coming close to costing you games. They could be 0-2 in part because of Vinatieri. At the end of the day, look, this locker room really loves Adam Vinatieri, okay? There's no one they respect more. However, that being said, as a coaching staff, as a front office, you also have obligations to those 52 other men, and that's where it gets complicated. At what point does your sort of your loyalty to Adam Vinatieri, at what point is that overshadowed by your duty to these 52 other guys who are putting their tails on the line trying to get a win every Sunday? That's where this is a really delicate thing. And look, I get that this is hard. It's hard for everybody. It's hard for me just covering it. I mean, I'm having to say things about Adam Vinatieri that I never thought I'd have to say. But that's just where we are. I don't know. No one comes out of this looking good, and it's just a really, really tough situation for everybody involved now. I mean, I think they're all stressed about this. His teammates, the coaches, the front office, the owner, I mean, it's a bad situation. The best-case scenario is he turns this thing around and somehow comes out of this funk. I don't think he's lost his ability to kick. I think a lot of this is mental. So that tells me Adam Vinatieri has the opportunity to come out of this because he can still kick. But this is a funk that he's never been in, and if he doesn't find his way out, they have to consider their options.
Hey, Stephen, we appreciate your taking a few minutes. Thanks very much from Indianapolis, Stephen Holder, Colts beat writer. Thanks.
All right, thanks,
Ryan. Thank you kindly.
So the Colts and the Falcons, one of the things we talked about earlier when we were talking about this game with Dan Quinn, 0-4 last year against the AFC. They got run by the AFC North, 1-7 against the AFC in the last two regular seasons, Hugh. This is an opportunity now with 3 straight games against that AFC South, Indianapolis, Tennessee, Houston, to kind of get over that little AFC bugaboo, whatever that AFC bugaboo happens to be for the Atlanta Falcons. But they're going to go in and face an Indianapolis team, as mentioned, too, playing its home opener. So they're going to be pretty charged about this game.
Oh, no question about it. And, you know, Coach Quinn alluded to it this morning that, you know, over the years that, you know, they haven't had that much success against, you know, AFC squads because of the familiarity thing, and they're not that familiar with them. So it's something that you definitely have to, you have to exercise that demon, especially now. You know, this season is, you know, you won't really get to play any of your NFC opponents till late in the season. So you want to make sure that you go into all of that on a positive note. And it starts with these, you know, this one against Indianapolis, and then you got the next two against other AFC teams. So You got to get that thing going.
And you got to control Marlon Mack. Now, you also have to check yourself against Jacoby Brissett. I mean, I know he's not Andrew Luck, but Jacoby's a veteran player. I mean, he's, you know, completing 70% of his passes. He's got 5 touchdowns and 1 interception. You know, ever since I think a lot of fans around here, Hugh, remember Jacoby Brissett at Florida, and he struggled at Florida. He lost his job at Florida and ended up transferring to NC State. But at NC State, he was pretty darn good. And he's been an effective player in the NFL, and now with an opportunity to become a true starter in the NFL. And he's not, like, 21 anymore. He's got to be 25, 26. So he's been around enough that he's a veteran quarterback, too. So don't kid yourself. He still has T.Y. Hilton. He still has a great offensive line that's going to give him a lot of time to throw.
Yeah, and he can run. You know, he had 7 carries last week, and he ran for, like, 25 yards. So he's a guy that adds a different dynamic when you talk about the last two quarterbacks that you played against. You know, you talk about that pass rush going inside, taking inside tracks, trying to get there and everything like that. He proposes a different problem. If you take an inside track on him and you don't have anybody with that outside contain, He could pull it down. And like Coach Quinn liked to say, he can extend the play. That's something that you definitely have to guard for against a quarterback like that.
Right, and you're going to see a lot of that coming up with teams like Houston and Arizona and Seattle all ahead, right? Not to mention New Orleans, maybe Carolina. Braves get set for another chance to whittle down that magic number against the Phillies tonight. What do you want to see right now as this final homestand of the season starts? starts to draw near. We'll discuss that with you next on The Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 99 The Game after a CBS Sports Minute.
And the pitch is hammered high in the air, deep to left field. Echevarria off the bench has hit a homer. It is 5-3.
But to their credit, I will say they did sort of resolve to move on pretty quickly. And I think that Saturday night it happened, and then by evening, and they were ready to go out and practice, and they were moving on. And they honestly did. It wasn't just talk. They really did show that in their actions.
We're talking to Stephen Holder, Indianapolis Colts beat writer on 92.9 The Game. So, Stephen, they move on to Jacoby Brissett. How did the team embrace him once they figured out all this was going on with Andrew Luck?
Well, the nice thing about Jacoby Brissett is that he is, I think, one of the absolute most respected players on the roster. I mean, and not just respected, but they truly like the guy. They love the guy, really. I mean, he is a guy who, and as you know from playing, there are definitely two sides to a team. There's offense and defense. And a lot of times it's very segregated and, you know, guys kind of don't interact as much. That is not the case with Jacoby Brissett. His best friend is a linebacker, Anthony Walker. I mean, it's, and I think you see him over there with the defensive guys oftentimes, you know, joking around, playing around. And I know that doesn't necessarily say a lot, maybe, but I think it's a really worthwhile observation because it's not necessarily that common. But it shows, I think, it speaks to how much this team has embraced Jacoby Brissett just because he's just a guy that everybody likes. And so that helps him, first of all. And then the other thing that has really worked in Jacoby Brissett's favor is the fact that he has, for the last two off seasons, he has been the only quarterback with the starting unit. Andrew Luck in 2018 did not practice throughout OTAs, didn't make it back until training camp, came back and had a great season, as you know. But throughout that offseason, Jacoby Brissett took all the first-team reps with Frank Reich while they were installing the offense. It was all Jacoby Brissett. So then come this offseason, same thing. Andrew Luck isn't 100%. They keep him out. And Jacoby Brissett takes all the snaps through OTAs. Andrew Luck starts training camp, but he's a little bit gimpy. A few days later, they hold him out, and Jacoby Brissett finishes training camp and the preseason. So he took all the reps, and he's been basically the guy, at least as it relates to practice, for the past 2 years. And so that has really, I think, gone a long way toward building trust between Jacoby Brissett and his teammates. And there really wasn't much that had to be said or done when he took over. It's just that, you know what, now it's for real, and now it's not just practice.
The Indianapolis Colts started off 1-1. They lost to the L.A. Chargers in the opener. Tough game, tough loss. And then went to Nashville and dodged that fire, that pregame fireworks thing that went off.
Yeah.
That had to be pretty bizarre. I mean, that fireworks thing lighting up the field. And managed to beat the Tennessee Titans 19-17 last week. So they're 1-1, and they get a big win in the Division II on the road, which is a score for you guys to start the season here. Stephen Holder is covering the team. Stephen, you look at the club now, and they kind of try and reimagine themselves as the second-best rushing team in the NFL. They're going to lean on Marlon Mack, and that's how Frank Reich has got to play this. At least early has got to be run first, correct?
I think they're taking what the defense is giving them to some extent, but they do want to emphasize the run. Frank Reich said, I think back early in the offseason, I remember him saying, he said, look, we want to be a top five rushing attack this season. And we all kind of looked at him like, yeah, I don't know about that. And to his credit, so far, they are walking the walk. But at the same time, they are going to have to throw the football. And I think the numbers aren't big right now. Look, they're one of the, in terms of passing yards, you know, they're near the bottom of the league right now. However, I think what I've seen so far is when they've had to throw it and when the situation has called for it, Jacoby Brissett has made the throws. And I think that's all that really can be judged. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're throwing it for 300 yards a game. What does matter is when you need a first down, when you have a situation where you have to throw it, can you make the plays? And frankly, they've been able to do that. I mean, Jacoby Brissett was 3-for-3 in the red zone for touchdowns on Sunday against Tennessee. And, I mean, a couple of those throws were really difficult throws, or not necessarily difficult, but just really timely and accurate throws. And as you know, down the red zone, things get tight and it gets hard. But he's been able to make difficult throws when called upon. And I think that's what it boils down to. Look, they're one of the top teams in third down conversions right now. So they're making critical plays when they need to. I think they're number 7 or 8 in the league in third down conversions. So, you know, they're getting it done. And I also think that I saw this last year with the Colts. Their offensive approach evolved over the course of the season. They certainly threw the ball a lot to start last season, but they were much shorter throws, very, very short on the air yards to start the season. And as the season progressed, they got more and more aggressive with their deeper throws. So we'll see how this season progresses. I don't think we've seen what we're going to see. I think we will see more as the season unfolds.
We're talking to Stephen Holder, Indianapolis Colts beat reporter on 92.9 The Game. So, Stephen, how do you think that the Indianapolis Colts offense is going to handle a guy like Grady Jarrett?
Yeah, I mean, look, they're going to have to be really physical at the point of attack. And they're coming off a game against, I think, an underrated Tennessee defense. That was a dogfight up front, I'm telling you now. I mean, they've got a really, really physical front. Mike Vrabel is a really good defensive coach. So the Colts got a huge test, I think, up front on Sunday in Tennessee. Now, look, they ran for over 200 yards against the Chargers, and that was not going to be repeated against Tennessee. But what we did see was they stuck with the run, and they took what they got. Will they double him? They may have to do that at times. You're going to see a lot of two tight end sets with the Colts. Yeah, Frank Reich loves tight ends. He's got some lineups where they even use three tight ends. They did that a couple of times on Sunday. So lots of tight ends. That gives you the opportunity, if you so choose, to double a guy like Grady Jarrett. I think that opportunity will be there for them. But the Colts are pretty good up front. So, I mean, they'll be ready for this. They'll be equipped to handle it. And I'm all ready to see some Quentin Nelson and Grady Jarrett action. I think that might be a treat for us. But I think it's going to be much of what we saw last Sunday against Tennessee. It's a really physical front, and it's going to be, you know, man against man, and somebody's going to win. But I think they'll both win their share. The Colts will win theirs, and Grady will win some of his.
Talking about the Colts and getting the insight from Indianapolis with Stephen Holder. Stephen, Adam Vinatieri is like 74 years old. He's still kicking, but he's not doing – he ain't doing too well right now. You know, I know that they're going to let him – what is he, 1 for 5 on PATs? They're going to let him kick. This is a guy that's going to the Hall of Fame, and it's kind of sad in a way to see that he's struggling this way. How long a leash does he have?
Yeah, I got to think that leash is pretty short at this point. I mean – look, he left 7 points on the field in the season opener. 7. I mean, that's just...
You win the game if he doesn't do that.
Yeah, they win the game. There's no question they win the game. And to be completely honest, his misses could have cost them this past Sunday because Tennessee missed a makeable field goal in the fourth quarter. If they make it, the Colts lose that game. So, you know, they got out of there with a 2-point win. And Vinatieri missed 2 extra points in that game. So I think at this point, it's costing you games, or at least coming close to costing you games. They could be 0-2, in part because of Vinatieri. At the end of the day, look, this locker room really loves Adam Vinatieri, okay? There's no one they respect more. However, that being said, as a coaching staff, as a front office, you also have obligations to those 52 other men, and that's where it gets complicated. At what point does your sort of your loyalty to Adam Vinatieri, at what point is that overshadowed by your duty to these 52 other guys who are putting their tails on the line trying to get a win every Sunday? That's where this is a really delicate thing. And, look, I get that this is hard. It's hard for everybody. It's hard for me just covering it. I mean, I'm having to say things about Adam Vinatieri that I never thought I'd have to say. But that's just where we are. I don't know. No one comes out of this looking good, and it's just a really, really tough situation for everybody involved now. I mean, I think they're all stressed about this. The teammates, the coaches, the front office, the owner. I mean, it's a bad situation. The best case scenario is he turns this thing around and somehow comes out of this funk. I don't think he's lost his ability to kick. I think a lot of this is mental. So that tells me Adam Vinatieri has the opportunity to come out of this because he can still kick. But this is a funk that he's never been in. And if he doesn't find his way out, they have to consider their options.
Hey, Stephen, we appreciate you taking a few minutes. Thanks very much from Indianapolis. Stephen Holder, Colts beat writer. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Rob.
Thank you kindly.
So the Colts and the Falcons, one of the things we talked about earlier when we were talking about this game with Dan Quinn, 0-4 last year against the AFC. They got run by the AFC North. 1-7 against the AFC in the last two regular seasons, Hugh. This is an opportunity now with three straight games against that AFC South, Indianapolis, Tennessee, Houston, to kind of get over that little AFC bugaboo, whatever that AFC bugaboo happens to be for the Atlanta Falcons. But they're going to go in and face an Indianapolis team, as mentioned, too, playing its home opener. So they're going to be pretty charged about this game.
Oh, no question about it. And, you know, Coach Quinn alluded to it this morning that, you know, over the years that, you know, they haven't had that much success against, you know, AFC squads because of the familiarity thing, and they're not that familiar with them. So it's something that you definitely have to, you know, you have to exercise that demon, especially now. You know, this season is, you know, you won't really get to play any of your NFC opponents till late in the season. So you want to make sure that you go into all of that on a positive note. And it starts with these, you know, this one against Indianapolis, and then you got the next two against other AFC teams. So You got to get that thing going.
And you got to control Marlon Mack. Now, you also have to check yourself against Jacoby Brissett. I mean, I know he's not Andrew Luck, but Jacoby's a veteran player. I mean, he's, you know, completing 70% of his passes. He's got 5 touchdowns and 1 interception. You know, ever since I think a lot of fans around here, Hugh, remember Jacoby Brissett at Florida, and he struggled at Florida. He lost his job at Florida and ended up transferring to NC State. But at NC State, he was pretty darn good. And he's been an effective player in the NFL, and now with an opportunity to become a true starter in the NFL. And he's not, like, 21 anymore. He's got to be 25, 26. So he's been around enough that he's a veteran quarterback, too. So don't kid yourself. He still has T.Y. Hilton. He still has a great offensive line that's going to give him a lot of time to throw.
Yeah, and he can run. You know, he had 7 carries last week, and he ran for, like, 25 yards. So he's a guy that adds a different dynamic. When you talk about the last two quarterbacks that you played against, you know, you talk about that pass rush going inside, taking inside tracks, trying to get there and everything like that. He proposes a different problem. If you take an inside track on him and you don't have anybody with that outside contain, He could pull it down. And like Coach Quinn liked to say, he can extend the play. That's something that you definitely have to guard for against a quarterback like that.
Right, and you're going to see a lot of that coming up with teams like Houston and Arizona and Seattle all ahead, right? Not to mention New Orleans, maybe Carolina. Braves get set for another chance to whittle down that magic number against the Phillies tonight. What do you want to see right now as this final homestand of the season starts to draw near? We'll discuss that with you next on The Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 99 The Game after a CBS Sports Minute.
And the pitch is hammered high in the air, deep to left field. Echevarria off the bench has hit a homer. It is 5-3.
Miss out on a hot topic?
Yeah.
No worries. Sinitra's got you covered as Sweet Tea brings the tea on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Well, we're so obsessed with the Falcons winning, the Braves clinching, and the Georgia Notre Dame game. I'm sure, Tanitra, we missed a lot of good stuff this week. I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. And we start with the Petty Files. Petty. Hashtag Petty.
Hey.
So you see, I got to set the stage, John, early. So I got to give the Jets credit here. Even in defeat, they gave music trolling a valiant shot. So ever since Baker Mayfield was drafted by the Browns, his favorite jam has been the drum solo to Phil Collins' In the Air Tonight. So, of course, whenever that drum solo hits, Mayfield's ready to get it in with some air drums just like this. You just gotta kind of let that ride for a second. That is like the smoothest thing ever.
Yeah, that was pretty dope.
And Wendy was telling me, you know, it's something that is played a lot at different stadiums around the country, but this is his thing. Like, every team knows that this is Baker Mayfield's thing.
Uh-huh.
So, with that in mind, the Jets wanted to mess around with his head, kind of get his head ahead of the game. So, as their loudspeakers were blaring this song, they abruptly cut it off right at the drum solo hit. But, of course, didn't bother Mayfield very much. He went on for 19-35 for 325 yards and a touchdown, and Browns get a 23-3 win.
Yeah.
But what's the pettiest thing you guys can think of that a team or a fan base did to try to get in the head of an opponent?
The New Orleans Saints put a band on the field and spelled out 28-3, those sons of...
And it wasn't just any band. It was Southern University. Shout out to my university.
That's the Jaguars, right?
Yeah,
Jaguars.
My entire family went to Southern University with the exception of me.
My answer. I'm sticking to it.
You're sticking to it. Patty, that's a good one, though.
Like, Patty, I would probably say the Redskins would put the cheerleaders right in front of, right where we would walk out and have them stretch. That was pretty petty because that was real, real distracting at the time. So that was probably about the pettiest thing that I've been a part of.
Ah, okay.
But I enjoyed it immensely, though. It was like, you know, to watch the cheerleaders do their thing, like right there. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. And the funny thing is, they did it. It was so quick that everywhere you go, like all these different outlets, nobody has a clip of the video because I've been looking for it just to kind of see
that
how it went down.
But
yeah,
it was,
yeah, they like literally waited until like that moment, bam. It's over.
Get you, Baker Mayfield.
And right, Baker Mayfield smoked them.
I got a number two, by the way. And
what's
number
that?
It goes to the Falcons for that. The video that they put
oh,
out.
Oh, no question. The video at the beginning of the season.
The schedule video.
Yeah, that was all the smoke right there, Falcons. All the smoke. So here's a feel-good story. You know, I always love these stories. And this one comes out of Iowa. Iowa State fan Carson King showed up to Saturday's edition of College Game Day in Ames looking to see the Cyclones pull off a win. He was also hoping to head home with some more beer money. So what he did not expect was if he put that request out on Twitter that fans would actually react to it, but they did. And they raised upward of, get this, $11,000. But when he hit the $1,600 mark on his request for that beer, he decided that he was going to donate the money to Steed Family Children's Hospital. So what he did was, like I said, once he hit the $1,600
mark. Is that the hospital that's right above the stadium that they waved
yes.
to?
Yes. Okay. It's the coolest thing if you're ever able to see it on Twitter or you're ever able to just see it because it's you know, on his page. But if you're ever able to Google it, it's the most amazing thing to see. It's pretty darn cool. Pretty darn cool. So he got excited. He decided, hey, I don't really even want the $1,600. I'm just going to see if I can get the fans to support. And between putting his Venmo handle out there and Busch Light, which was the beer he was drinking, they got a wind of it, and they decided to match as well. So the total is at $11,000 and climbing. More money is on the way from Busch Light. And, of course, he did get a little something good for his Good Samaritan efforts. Busch Light will supply him with a year worth of free beer.
Hold
nicely
up.
Done, Carson.
So this story started out from him begging for beer money.
He was begging for beer money.
And he felt bad about the money that he raised to get beer.
Right.
So he decided to give it away.
Yeah.
Smart, man.
And I think that's a cool deal.
I mean,
yeah,
smart,
he's just,
man.
You know how you're watching game day and you just got the fans right behind the analyst. And so he's holding up this sign that literally says, Busch Light needs refurbishing. And then he tweets out his Venmo app. And then, you know, people just kind of go with that.
It's amazing what people to give money for.
It is.
I mean, right. Really amazing
what people like to give $1,600 money for. Because he asked for his beer to be topped off.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But I like that he went positive with it, did something good with it.
Yeah, because he probably felt bad, like, after, like, that much money for beer, not thinking that, come on, man.
But you got to give him credit for not even just, I mean, he could have paid off
for
his
being
cell
selfless.
Phone bill.
Yeah,
he could have just pocketed that money and kept it moving. So I just kind of love this. And here's a word to the wise that I think John can appreciate, because John lives a little bit up in the rural parts of town, if you will. So, you know, sometimes you got to be a little bit more careful in not leaving the front door open. And that was not such a good idea in California. A mountain lion.
Those cougars are not small.
Right. And so this mountain lion, you know, he just kind of saunters on into this house in Sonora. And literally, the family, you know, they just walk in from wherever they were during the course of the day. They run upstairs, and one of the family members goes in to use the bathroom. And there the cougar is, and we'll tweet this out for you. There the cougar is just chilling, like he's like the house cat. And, I mean, this family totally freaks out, of course. They call the deputies. They call the warden. They put up a ladder outside the window, pound on the walls to try to get the thing out. But, of course, I think the Fish and Wildlife group came out and they were able to get it. But I'm like, leaving your door open in California, that struggle is real. Because, I mean, I freaked out one day, and this was in Smyrna, by the way, where I just left a crack in the back door and there was a snake on the patio. And I was like, yeah, I'm done with that. Like,
yeah,
I'm never even
that?
Going. Yeah.
That's some country stuff.
Yeah.
Right there.
Left the door wide open and you come back home and like a mountain cat is in your bathroom chilling.
Yeah, that's not going to be a pleasant day for me.
No, but, well,
but see,
that's not a pleasant day.
Probably
a whole lot of bodily fluids being evacuated at the time. That's a scary thought.
You know, come out
lying in your house.
You know, normally guys wouldn't mind a cougar walking into their house, but in this case, maybe not. In California, a lot of times, like in coastal California, where I lived when I was out there in San Clemente, nobody has air conditioning because it's 74 every day, right? And so you will leave your front door open all the time. And one time, my ex-wife, God rest her soul, and I went out for a weekend, and we left our front door all weekend. We forgot to close it. So we got home, and the front door was open.
What the heck was in your... Did you have new residents?
The house, we just left the front door open.
No, I'm saying, like, new residents, as in critters and creepy crawlies.
No, there was nothing got in. No. And nobody walked in because everybody just assumed, oh, somebody's home, because everybody leaves their front door open.
Right, and you see, you guys know I'm from Louisiana originally, just outside of New Orleans, so it's like swamp country. You're leaving no door open. I mean, there may be a gator... A snake and a possum. I mean, hey, look, I do admit, you know, I grew up in the
country.
Sticks. So, yeah, I mean, just a hair. So.
But you still lock the door in the country now.
Oh, yeah. That was years ago.
The Maven keeps that door locked.
Yeah. And there's one story that producers Abe and Oren wanted us to get to. Ran out of time, but we will put a link on the 92.9 Twitter page to talk about a massive explosion after a blaze hits a bull artificial insemination facility. So go on to marinate on that, people.
Oh, there's a joke in there, isn't there?
It is.
That's why we're just putting the link.
But
I'm going to
leave it alone.
There might be 10.
Explosions.
They are absolutely, never mind. We got a lot of college football to get to, too. It is Georgia Notre Dame week. Thanks, Denitra. Georgia Notre Dame week. Everybody excited for the big game. Biggest non-conference game, at least of the year in college football. Coming to Athens on Saturday night, and we're going to get you rolling towards that. Yeah, if there was ever a snake in my house, Hugh, my Maven has said, first time a snake gets into this house, we're selling the house and moving. I mean, she is deathly afraid of them. So I worry about that all the time. Loose emoji of the Blue and Gold Illustrated covering Notre Dame going to join us next. We're going to get the real inside skinny on what you Georgia fans ought to be concerned about when it comes to playing Notre Dame. We'll do that next live on The Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.